Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Week in League, shocking new research shows COVID causes brain damage as Adam Reynolds declares the Broncos are premiership contenders.
Luke Brooks to be sent to Ukraine to stand in front of Russian tanks to see if all attack on Earth dies when he's close.
A stellar performance from Appy Coruscant leaves Manly as lifeless as all his other exes.
Plus, we look ahead to all the action for Round 2 of the 2022 NRL season.
All that and more this week in League. Welcome to episode 446 of This Week in League. I'm Nate.
And I'm Jay.
And I am Glenn.
You are fucking cancelled this time.
I thought I had
COVID for a second. That first line was quite fucking long and I didn't quite budget the amount of breath to take in at the start of it. And I was feeling a bit of pressure on the lungs by the time I got to the end of it. Anyway, how we doing, fellas?
Fantastic.
Feels like forever since we've spoken. You get used to this. Night phone calls.
Was there a stretch we went through last year where we did? Like we had to make up a membisode or something and do one of these and like we did like three or four nights in a row, yeah. I feel
like we'd in more winter, inclined to stack the nights,
middle of winter and we fucking jammed three late nights in a row where it was a similar time where we went, let's do an hour flat, knock this over. And fuck me, we're still rolling at fucking midnight.
But the last episode worked. I said an hour flat and I'm sure it was like about an hour 18 or something like that, but that's pretty close. Mm. The closest we've ever come. Maybe we're getting better at this. 450 episodes in.
Just had a 20-odd minute car ride with Jax, who lost his semi-final tonight in touch football. So that was a stark contrast to the last 20 minutes where there was lots of words spoken. It's fuck all words spoken in the car on the way home.
So after a loss, he's a bit of a Mitch Moses.
Oh, yeah. He's just, he's dirty. He's hyper-competitive and doesn't like to lose. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Mm. How'd he go individually?
He dropped one. He dropped one ball that he would normally catch in his fucking sleep. He was pretty dirty on it. It happened in the first half and he was still dirty well after halftime. So are you
going to teach him a lesson tonight?
Well, I said to him, mate, you're only in the side for your hands, so if you're fucking dropping balls, what the fuck are you there for?
No, so you need to throw balls at him while he is asleep. You need to kick his door in and scream, think fast, you useless motherfucker.
Look, I'll leave you to be the dad that throws his balls at his kids when they're asleep, mate, but I'll just let the kids sleep off a loss and fucking wake up tomorrow and it's a new day.
Glenn, there's no need for crude humour.
Oh, thanks, mate. Thanks for the advice. Really appreciate it. I'll take a leaf out of your book.
No one laughs at potty mouths.
I really appreciate you leading the way.
No,
I can't remember which movie it was, but there was an American football movie, and one of the players in the team became known for, you know, poor handling, and so the coach entrusted him with a ball, and he had to have this ball with him at all times, and everyone else was instructed, if you see this guy with the ball at any time, anywhere, knock it out of his hands, and if you drop it, you know, he lays out some consequences. And so this guy had to carry this ball like it was an egg all the time at school, in between classes, anywhere he went. And there were people out there looking for him to try and knock out. So do that to Jackson. Just give him a ball and say, okay, here you go. Every drop is worth, I don't know, set punishment. And then his handling will be good next time.
And then give his little brother an air horn.
Well, you just give the bounty. Whatever you're punishing him, I mean, make it a monetary thing. And then whatever the money is, you make sure that's getting injected straight into the Leo economy so that he's equally incentivized to see.
You guys are fucking monsters.
Oh, forgive us for handling problems like the fucking United Nations, economic sanctions.
Yeah, but in this case, you are empowering a dictator.
Well, I mean, the thing about empowering dictators is, I mean, it works out great when it's your dictator.
Yeah.
If you lose control of him, which, I mean, for Leo, I mean, surely you've got another 5, 6, 7 years before he starts to become a problem.
My friend, you need to spend a bit more time around Leo William Blackley, because that motherfucker's out of control already.
Now, look, I was looking at the news articles earlier, and surprisingly, there's not a lot out there in terms of news.
Can I throw a bold prediction?
Yeah, sure.
While there is other clickbait-worthy shit going on in the world, and normally you would expect a downturn in shock horror rugby league stories because it's an election year. We got that going on at home. We still have the tail end of COVID, you know, and any clickbaity shit around that still generates attention. We also have this fucking invasion in Ukraine, unless Russia win, in which we have this heroic peacekeeping mission in Ukraine. But I am almost certain that the powers that be at news outlets understand exactly what they can and can't obtain in terms of clicks from the general public.
So, just hang on. You are really on a mission to be cancelled tonight in one night. So, you just said if Russia win, it'll be pitched as a fucking peacekeeping victory. How good. I love it.
You know, that's a joke a la to the newsreader saying, you know, I welcome our new alien overlords.
Love it.
But, no, I'm almost certain now that because there is so much stuff out there for people to click on, they don't need to blow all of their rugby league clickbait loads yet.
Mm.
And I guarantee you there is scandalous shit saved up for after Putin signs the fucking get the fuck out of here papers, and you'll start to see an uptick then. Mark my fucking words. And it also shows that over the last little couple of years, any actual journalist that can sit down and write a decent analytics piece about the game is out of the fucking industry. They're doing something else. You know, except for the odd one or two, it is nothing but fucking clickbait. Like, did you see fucking Paul Kent's article suggesting that Tommy be moved to centre?
Moved to centre in round two.
Yeah.
Who the fuck said that?
Paul Kent.
Oh, my good Lord.
Now, again, you're sort of contrary report. That is the... It's not even... Well, look, it is clickbait. But how is that... How is that even a thing? You know?
Yeah, it's straight up... It's like engagement bait for the snippet that gets pushed out on socials.
Yeah.
For, you know, for every rugby league fan then to at him and say... Watch the fucking game, you mongoloid. You don't know shit about fuck, you know.
But how many articles have there been around, you know, here's a breakdown of the on-field KPIs of teams that won this week versus teams that didn't. You know, whatever it may be. Where's that analysis? There's fucking none.
Well, there's none, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, the clickbait, there just isn't a great deal of news, period. Like, even removing, like, the ongoing battle against the clickbait out of the equation, there's just not, like, just the sheer volume of stuff they're putting out there is so low at the moment.
Because they don't need to.
I mean, yeah, but also, yeah, maybe it's not even like they're focusing on the games. It's just...
Exactly.
There's just not a hell of a lot out there. I mean, there's a little bit about Bellamy coming up because he's got his 500th coaching game this weekend. So there's a little bit around that. A tidbit out of that was that apparently he was steered away. He was set to sign to coach the Raiders in 2002 and was kind of nudged, pointed in a different direction. So just think about sliding doors moments if the Raiders had managed to land Bellamy back in 2002.
2002. Who was on that squad?
I honestly could not fucking remember a single inhabitant. Yeah, but it's not necessarily about the 2002s. It's more about the structural ground up systems that would be in place at Canberra now, where players aren't getting spitefully dropped for no reason. Their wags are kept under control, and they're not gobbing off either on the socials.
Yep.
And you would assume that Canberra would be the term faders would never have come into existence.
Yeah,
you'd think.
Jason Croker, Brett Finch. Oh fuck, Bellamy didn't have kids at that stage, so it would have been okay. Michael Hodgson, Mark McClendon.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to say he was going to get immediate success, but remember, he turned that Storm side to, you know, he took them to a grand final in, what, 06 with largely unheralded at the time players.
That's it. Ruben Wickie. Ryan O'Hara. Oh.
Maybe he could have got the extra, the jet skis and Harvey Norman stuff through his, like, government grants or something as well. That would have made more Teflon for the cheating. But look, you know, 500 games, it's a hell of an achievement.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, coaches can get moved on very swiftly
and
if the results aren't there. So it's testament to continually good results over a very long period of time, like 2 decades.
Like, how many times have we said it on this show? The ratio of people that are average or fringe first graders going to Melbourne and play rep games and become superstars and win premierships and look like world beaters compared to those ones who come out of the Melbourne system, go elsewhere, and never get even close to the heights that they reached in the Storm system. That, I think, is the greatest part of his legacy.
Yep, I would agree. And the only story in Twitter, clickbait, is the headline from Andrew Webster was Booty Ball. Colin, why the Roosters aren't worried about Sam Walker. And it goes on to say that that Trent Robinson has dismissed concerns about Sam Walker's size heading into his second season, claiming that it's the size of his ass that impresses him. And the quote from Trent himself is, "I talk about the Walker ass," Robinson explains straight-faced. "All the Walkers had round, powerful asses. That's a help for him. That's a benefit." And he goes on to say, "This year he's got thicker shoulders, more of a chest, but he's always had that thick ass that makes him quick. His legs are a bit bigger so he can kick further. He's got an extra 5 metres on his goal kicking in general play. And I think he'll have a lot better year than last year." And then it goes on to have a discussion with Ben Walker, his dad.
About his ass.
Well, he didn't play he played 424 games, right, in the NRL. He played for Manly. He was the leading point scorer, I think, one of the years. But he said, "It missed me, but his uncles Chris and Shane have it. Size won't be an issue for Sam. It is now like it is for most players when they're 18 or 19 and they haven't developed. He'll grow into himself. You can't beat genetics," and blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on to actual real metrics about weight and height rather than his ass. But
bizarre conversation. But anyway.
So while you are, pleased with the lack of clickbait at the moment, let me tell you. You can still find the fucking tales out there.
Well, look, I'll tell you what, though. But see, that's not clickbait per se.
Like, no, Paul, it's not clickbait. Paul, I'm just Kensey, saying, but it's also not the fucking analysis that you're reaching out for either.
They've said, "Okay, guys, no more clickbait this week. We need some good old fashioned rugby league journalism. Everyone, get out in the streets and find me a story." Can you imagine little fucking Webby sitting behind his laptop there, tapping that out, going, "Oh, I haven't written a real news story in years. This is fucking great." And that's what he comes out with.
I feel like George Negus.
Goes to thesaurus.com. Let's find some words that we can use for ass. Oh, booty, there we go. Yeah. Oh, of course. "My Humps" by fucking Black Eyed Peas. Let me just transcribe that. And
he's sitting there humming the fucking Four Corners theme to himself. Fuck off back to your hole, you useless flop.
Well, that was rather venomous.
Oh, man. I've been
grumpy tonight, mate.
I have been told
just tonight
by journos on Twitter again, without any irony in their voice, it's better to be first than right. Like, an employed journalist in rugby league said that to me on Twitter without a hint of fucking irony about it. It's better to be first than right. So, you know.
Yep.
Now we're writing stories about the size of people's asses.
Yeah, fair. Was it the first time you heard that story? Case closed.
It's first and right. Fucking hell.
And of course, I mean, it's, you know, it's obvious. I mean, like, Joey was the fastest player that we've ever seen in the game.
Yeah, that's it. You
know, all thanks to that fucking dump truck.
Yeah.
Now,
dropout records that'll never be broken.
Mm-hmm. Fuck. Now, let's just look ahead to the game, shall we? Round two of the 2022 NRL Telstra Premiership. The first game, the Thursday game, is the Melbourne Storm taking on the South Sydney Rabbitohs down there at the Korean Housewife in Melbourne. Now, a bit of change there for the Melbourne Storm. I mean, obviously on face value, you look at their performances last week and go, well, you know, the Storm should have them covered if they can keep that going. However, Brandon Smith, broken hand, Christian Welsh, Achilles, as we mentioned in the last episode, and George Jennings. I mean, they're both essentially gone for the season, you know, with some hope.
Yep.
Munster and Grant come straight into the side at 6-9. Mm-hmm. So Meaney drops to the reserves. Look, and they got Jesse Bromwich straight in as a straight swap for Welsh. So it's not the end of the world, but, you know, they certainly can't really sustain too many more injuries.
Yeah.
You know, for a bit there, because, you know, they lost some of the good guys. The Rabbitohs, for their part, they've got Latrell back in fullback. So who else we got there? Johnson goes to the wing. Mansour out of the 17. So I guess the question is, do the Rabbitohs really, does the reappearance in the lineup of Latrell do enough for the Rabbitohs to give them a chance of getting even within 20 of this Storm side?
I think the Rabbitohs will be better than they were last week, but you look,
yep,
you compare the 1-6-7-9, the Rabbitohs haven't shown that they have a 7 yet. Munster back in is massive, and obviously Cheese being out is a dent for the Storm, but Harry Grant comes in and, you know, business as usual. I think the Storm will win comfortably.
Well, now they've actually got a hooker, you know, with Grant and Smith being injured and sitting on the sideline for that whole game almost.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so now they've actually got a hooker in the side. And the thing is, you know, how much did the Cheese thing stunt the Storm against the Tigers? It just, like, that game just sort of had the feeling that the Storm kind of figured it out within a game.
On the fly.
Yeah,
of what they had to do. And so I think that they'll, you know, pretty much just go on with that. I don't think they're going to have a slow start this week. Rabbits, though, I know it's early in the season, so I'm not too keen to go out on, you know, massive hot takes. But, man, they've got to show something.
Yeah, I think there's too much pressure on Ilias at this stage. And this is a massive test, and away from home, I don't think they're up to it.
Mm.
Yeah, and he's gonna get roasted through the fire too in this game.
To continue my fucking rant against shit journalists, I heard old mate fucking Red Nose Buzz talking about this game and was looking at, right. So they've played 35 matches.
Right.
Melbourne have won 30. Souths have won 5.
Okay.
And so he said, the law of averages tells us that Souths are more than due.
So voodoo, essentially, is what he's talking about.
Well, he doesn't understand how fucking laws of averages work for a fucking start. Yeah, no. I don't think Souths have it in it this early in the season. The outs you mentioned for Melbourne are big. But all of a sudden, you've got fucking ready-made rep-level replacements that slot straight in there, plus the return of Australia's representative number 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Storm will win by plenty.
That's it.
I mean, for the sake of Rabbitohs fans, and, like, I mean, is there such a thing? You'd like to see better out of them, but I don't think they got a chance.
Is there such a thing as Rabbos fans?
Yeah, I don't know. You tell me. Look, I can't say for sure. I mean, you don't know what you don't know. But
never met one.
I've never met one. I've never seen one.
There is a reporter put on Twitter today. They bragged about South Sydney being the only club that has a dedicated group of supporters that come to every training session, which are held during work days.
To be fair, I'm surprised Penrith and Tigers haven't got a similar group set up, if I'm honest. But
pub slot game, Dragons take on the Panthers. And this one, George Burgess comes into the squad in the 17 jersey with Aaron Woods out. Murderous Frank Molo is going to start up front. And Tarek Sims listed in the reserves. I'm not sure he's going to get any game time for the Penrith Panthers. Leota being out puts Lemieux in to start, and Eisenhuth fills the vacant bench slot.
Penrith will have plenty.
How many?
Again, you remember that Penrith are still at heart a very young team. They're still without Cleary, and while O'Sullivan had an excellent debut last week, you know, youth and inexperience and hubris.
The fucking defending premiers, cunt. They're going to run out to a 24-point lead after about 15 fucking minutes and coast the rest of the way. Get the fuck out of here.
Panthers touch 50 in this game, right, Glenny?
I'm assessing.
I think they'll coast. I honestly think they'll blast them early, shock and awe, and then they'll coast. I don't think they'll get 50. You know, I don't think it'll be a massive blowout.
Couple of consolations, 38-12.
Although, have you seen the Dragons? The one thing the Dragons have that they haven't faced this year is a good fullback.
Yeah, Tyler Sloan did about a third of the statistics of fucking Tommy last week. So, yeah, but please go on.
We're going to need a bigger boat. But
I fact-checked all that shit rigorously. I can tell you the meters, line breaks, tries, and try assists for every fullback.
Oh, fuck. Penrith 13 plus, put your house on it.
Yep. Okay. Main game Friday night, the Roosters take on the mighty Manly Sea Eagles at the SCG. I fucking hate the SCG for footy. I mean, like, it was great in, like, 1987, but the big oval with the smaller, I fucking don't rate it anymore. The Roosters side, they've got Letters at prop and Baker at bench. They swap back. Otherwise, their lineup is the same as last week. Manly, Dylan Walker makes his return from his ankle injury, which pushes Cooler to the reserves. Otherwise, the same.
Letters, the man that's never been tackled until last week when Kurt Mann tackled him, and that made Kurt Mann a good forward, according to some fucking mouth breather.
Letters maybe, he may almost be one of the last surviving nickname having players from like back in the day, like from around the start of the show. If you think, like, you know, with so many, you know, retiring, just aging out of the game.
Yeah.
He may be one of the last. Yeah. Fucking so, yeah, unicorn. I guess that makes him some kind of national treasure of some small fucking...
small by, yeah, you've only got a week's worth of form to go off. I think Manly would be too strong for the Roosters. They didn't impress me last week, and Manly certainly faced a higher quality of opposition in round one. I think they'll be too strong for the Roosters.
Yeah, Manly and their fans, and rightly so, would have been absolutely shitting themselves about this game right up until the point that they saw the Roosters play last week.
Well, no, I think, I think that it fires them up more. I mean, I think having to give credit to Newcastle as a side, as a vanquished side, is, you know, a fate worse than, you know, almost everything. Maybe conceding a hat-trick to Noffa would be worse, but... Or not putting a hat trick on the offer, maybe. But I think that the Roosters will be absolutely stinging after the way they performed and going down the way they did to the Newcastle fucking Knights of all people, who after the injury to Brayley in the preseason, were one of those teams that was dipped to take a massive plummet down the ladder. So
yeah, that's it.
So look, I mean, like, yeah, Manly obviously faced the strongest opposition by far. I'd love to see him turn it around this week and just put it like I said on last night's show. It's like they saw the fucking standard last week, and they've got the entire season to fucking work to that standard now. And you know, I'd like to see them taking some fucking steps towards that. It would be handy if things happened, like if Carl Lawton, you know, had the decency to not knock himself out this week.
Yeah.
Because that was fucking massive, not being able to rotate the hookers after halftime. And other than that...
Here's the thing, though. I think it's less about your opposition. Ball. Exactly. It's less about your opposition. And you did face great opposition last week, but less about that and more about how you respect the ball, because all the pieces are there for Manly. And over the course of 80 minutes, you know, give it to Tommy is enough of a strategy that it got you to, you know, very close to the grand final last year.
Yeah,
but to be able to give it to Tommy, you've got to hold on to the ball and get it into good field position.
Imagine what a fucking treat it would be to get a fucking repeat set, or even have like more than three sets in the 20 across the entire game.
Yeah,
what a treat. That's what I'm hoping to see. And yeah, I think they'll win because the Rooster side, I don't feel like it's significantly better than the side they faced in the finals.
No,
and I'm still wondering, you know, how. Battle hardened Keary is, and I mean, even to this day, he's talking about, you know, concussion protocols and things like that.
Yeah,
like I just wonder, you know, if he's going to be the next Boyd Cordner. But I want to see some of those big boys just running straight at the left shoulder of Sam Walker and giving that a good old test.
But this is the thing, but like not being in a fucking position where you tackle and you use your body and you get used to that as being your natural state.
Mm.
That I don't see Keary reaching the same heights. The hesitancy has to be there, you know, has to be. He plays above his weight, knowing that one hit ends his career. Fuck, like I don't know how he manages to get out there every week. I really don't.
And I'd like to see someone fold Victor Radley as well, or he could just fold himself like he did last week.
Yeah, exactly. Nice, yeah.
Yeah, whatever he decides to do. And that's the other issue for the Roosters. I mean, with Verrills still out, I mean, Verrills is not a top tier hooker. When he's unavailable, and like Connor Watson, who's like a, you know, pretty good utility value for the Knights last year, I thought.
Yep.
I don't think he's really a starting hooker either.
Nope.
And I mean, like, you know, I guess that means it evens the playing field because Manly certainly don't have one. But yeah, we shall see. I'm expecting Manly to win though, and I'm hoping to see if at least a fucking, you know, much improved showing of what they can do. The Saturday early game is the Gold Coast Titans taking on the New Zealand Warriors down there at Hope Solo. And the Titans, your mate Brimson returns after missing round one. So that gets them into presumably what they're going forward, their halves combination will be with Brimson and Sexton.
Yep.
And so Smith back to interchange and Boyd to the reserves, the Warriors side. Okay, so a fair few changes there. Reece Walsh and Matt Lodge both return following suspension. Ash Taylor comes into the halves to replace the injured Sean Johnson. Jesse Arthurs comes in to replace the injured centre Vialia. Harris DeVita moves to 5'8 to accommodate Walsh's return at fullback. And Cody Nikorima then is pushed out to the reserves. DWZ is out injured. Pompey, his replacement on the wing. Bunny Afoa to the bench for Lodge to return at prop. And Ben Murdoch-Masila pushed to the reserves.
Mm.
So it's an all-new Warriors side this week.
I like and, the Titans, you know, in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the Titans are a tough team. They're a tough team to, you know, you wouldn't want to put money on at the moment. Because obviously they have some point scoring ability in them. But man, just the way that they can duck out of games and watch the thing pass them by before they come back is this is something that was a problem for them the year before last. And then they started to sort of get it right towards the end of that season. And they expected it. So the last season was the season of hope. But the amount of times they did the same thing, I mean, there was a game against Manly where they were leading like 24-4 or something, or 24-8 at halftime, and ended up losing by 50. So I think against Look, a more unsettled opponent. I mean, that's just the team list I just read out for the Warriors is completely different.
I think the Warriors will improve just the fact that Walsh is back in the side, and I think Lodge obviously adds some starch up front, but I don't know. I think the Titans, I'm looking to Fifita to be vastly improved and more involved. And they'll need him to be, but yeah, I think the Titans will be too strong.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I think the Titans will win, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Warriors came up and did something as well, though. You know, it's just one of the, I wouldn't be surprised if it was another shootout like the Titans game was last week. And I mean, the Dragons game last week with the Warriors was, you know, by and large that as well, until the Dragons sort of, you know, got, you know, a couple in a row at the end there to finish them off. But yeah, I think I'd probably favour the, who I got here, I just want to make sure. Yeah, I tipped the Titans. The Sharkies take on the Eels, 5:30 on Saturday. And the Sharkies in this one, unchanged in the 17. But in the reserves, we see the names Cameron McInnes, Franklin Pelle, and Connor Tracy listed for the first time. So we may be finally seeing McInnes actually set foot on the field after about 5 years on the sidelines. Mm. It feels pretty much the day after he was a contender for the New South Wales Origin rake.
Yeah.
The Eels side. Sean Russell's rib injury sees Blake to the wing. Opacek goes in to fill the centre vacancy. Ryan Madison's out. Kafusi's named at lock. Nathan Brown and Bryce Cartwright come onto the bench with Jacob Arthur pushed to the reserves.
Power too strong. I think the Sharks are still finding their way a little bit, but I still think at their very core, they're still a gritty, grinded out sort of side, and I think Parramatta are very much a fucking sling it and see kind of side with a lot more skill-based players in their side, and I think at this early stage of the season, I think points will rule the day. Gary's got more in him.
Here's the thing. I think to be a gritty, grind-em-out sort of team, you need every member of that team in on that mission. And the Sharks look like they'd never met the player next to them last week.
Mm.
So I don't see how they grit and grind anybody in their current guys. You end up with one person trying to, you know, put a hero play on, like Ramien did right at the end, and essentially giving an avenue to lose the game. Also, when you play Parramatta, there are plenty of weak points in their defence, you know, i.e. Wonga Blake still loves himself a fucking rush-up. Yep. And I don't think Cronulla and their current guys are cohesive enough to run out there with a game plan to target him all night. I think they're too worried about how they're playing together rather than putting together something to specifically attack an opposition. So, Parramatta.
And also Parramatta. I mean, the Eels we saw last week, they're nowhere near as good as they can be. No, like the way that, like the points that they led in last week, that would have absolutely fucking infuriated. I'm sure they'd be happy with the amount of points they scored, but some of the stuff they let in there from the Titans, they would have been absolutely infuriated. And you know, I guess that, you know, it's round one, plenty of time to fix it. But I'd like, you know, if I'm a Parramatta fan, I'd like to see them turn around, you know, with a greater focus on, you know, on actual defense this week.
Yep.
And the Sharks are a perfect team to do that against, because they're not a team that's going to, you know, blow you off the park.
I would like to see the Mort give Gutherson the Gutherino, though.
I would love it to become an ongoing meme across all other 15 clubs all season long.
Correct.
Every week that a try is scored on Gutherson, and let's face it, whether he plays well or whether he doesn't play well, he's the fullback. I mean, he's going to be the last guy in a lot of tries being scored. Mm. The opportunity to throw the fucking diamond up and fucking Gutherino, D's nuts in his mouth, it's fantastic. And I'd like to see some sort of award at the Dally M's.
Like, or no.
Anti-Gutherino.
Let's try and put a fucking positive 2022 vibe on this.
Oh, that was positive.
No, why don't we have it so that every time that happens,
yeah,
$5,000 can be donated to a charity who looks after kids whose fucking parents are related and name their child Clint.
Right, we may have to form that charity too. So, call the lawyers. I don't think there's a charity that specific.
Clint's not cunts. At the moment.
Oh, that can be the title of the episode.
Clint'snotcunts.org.
That's going to be the title of the episode if we don't come up with anything better.
Can you imagine the marketing campaign? Have you ever wondered where the Clint is?
And I'll tell you, I'm going to go. I'm going to log into my dashboard at the web hosting company on fucking Monday. And if that's not fucking, if that domain name has not been purchased by someone, I'll be very disappointed. The North Queensland Cowboys take on the Canberra Raiders. This one up at the Abattoir in Townsville. The Cowboys side, Tanoa Brown's out. Jordan McLean starting prop in his place. Hess back in the starting side at prop after being losing the game for them in the last play last week. Dunn back in the bench. Canberra Raiders side, Frawley replaces Schneider, who I believe has the Covice. Starling is hooker. Hodgson's out with a knee. And Trevelyan is the rotation hooker in jumper number 14.
Fucking Trevelyanaire. How good.
So, Raiders the Cowboys showed absolutely fucking nothing. It doesn't matter what the Raiders did. Even if somehow I'd missed blanket coverage and not seen a minute of that game, I'm still tipping them because the Cowboys showed literally nothing. I look forward to tons of Chad Towns and fucking inside balls to, you know,
Tom Cohen Hess.
The battering rams like Cohen Hess and fucking Mitchell Dunn all game from like 10 meters out, finish 8 meters out. And look, outside of just individual brilliance from, you know, from the Hammer, and enough space to give Kyle Felt the opportunity to do a finish.
Mm.
What the fuck have they got?
Taumalolo. Yeah. They get about 21 minutes out of Taumalolo.
That's so, it.
I think Canberra will be too strong across the park for the Cowboys.
Taumalolo, 54 minutes in the middle.
Mm.
Yeah. That's my prediction.
Yeah. There you go.
Moving to Sunday, the Newcastle Knights take on the West Tigers. And in Newcastle, the Newcastle side unchanged, 17. And Daniel Saifidi makes an appearance in number 24 on the bench. The West Tigers side, Tamau returns from suspension. Twoll goes to the bench and Garner out with the first 17. What do you make of your side this week, Glenny?
Strong side, mate. Strong side. Way too
stronger. Stronger because James Tamau is starting in the number 8.
Look, we go as Big Steph goes. Tamau is there for his experience, apparently. As I said last night, I saw enough of the Tigers to be reasonably confident that they're going to be competitive, and certainly against sides like Newcastle. I thought Newcastle were pretty good last week, and they're playing at home.
Before we go any further,
dangerous players. Sorry,
can I just start?
Where you go?
Does Bradman Best play on Knopf's side of the field?
Yes.
Please continue.
I expect Dominic Young to be tested and fail those tests. I think the Tigers will be far too strong and get their premiership campaign off with a victory, and this will set us on a path to greatness. I don't even sound like you believe it anymore. I honestly can't see why we wouldn't put 40 on the Knights. I don't know.
How much is the Knights going to score? 42 or more? Like, it sounds like
Nathan, I'm trying to fucking dole out rugby league truth here, and you got to just bring your rubbish to the table.
Halfway through your rugby league truth, I thought you were going to fucking nod off. You were so bored by the bullshit you were trying to put out there, man.
Mate, you're spitting so much truth. Frank Winterstein's trying to fuck you.
He's rolled himself in fucking rice powder.
No, in all seriousness, I think this will be a competitive game. I expect the Tigers to win. But I am looking forward to see how they go and how Jackson Hastings and his combination with Dano and Brooksy develops again for another week.
Dano.
Tigers 13 plus. Yeah, Dano.
And I'm particularly interested.
He plays with it. Much like Michael Jordan used to play with his North Carolina shorts under his Bulls shorts, Dano plays with his Penrith jersey under his Tigers jersey. And, you know, he's fucking Superman.
You know, don't think Michael Jordan was ever caught sticking his fucking undies out the window of a car.
He had enough money to cover that up, mate.
That's it.
and I'm most keen to see the continued experience and evolution of Kelma Tuolangi as he earns some valuable first grade experience before he comes to Manly to win a comp next year. Now, the Doggies take on the Broncos at Sydney Olympic Park. Doggy side. Okay, so Tevita Pangai Jr. is back in the starting side this week in the back row. So Waddell drops back to the bench. And let me tell you, that sentence that I just said then could be the biggest fucking positive versus negative I've ever seen. Like, the disparity between Tevita Pangai Jr. and Corey Waddell is like, I mean, it's barely less than Tevita Pangai Jr. versus like a fucking cadaver. Now, what else have we got here? Thompson starting at prop. Shoup is on the reserves list. And that's it for those guys. Broncos side. Okay. Their side last week has one big change with Adam Reynolds making his debut for the side. And that'll see Kelly move to 5'8". Billy Walters goes to the bench. And Tyrone Roberts out. Tessie New is fit and he will be fullback. And that pushes Jermaine Osako out to the reserves. And Kobe Hetherington returns via the bench.
I expect the Broncos to be too strong, certainly with Reynolds in the side. I think there'll be a dip in what the Broncos are doing if and when Billy Walters comes on the field and Pangai Jr. can get at him.
What kind of utility value does Billy Walters have? If you're not going to play him in the halves, why wouldn't you just...
I think there's a perception, probably from his dad, that he's an adequate fill-in nine.
Right.
And possibly...
Did you talk him up as a nine when he was wearing a fucking orange jersey?
Never. I never talked him up in any capacity.
Really?
Well, maybe. Maybe he had one good game.
We record these, you know.
You got to remember, his dad is of the vintage where in some instances, 6, 7, and 9 were interchangeable for certain periods of a game. So,
no. Based on what we saw last week, again, we've only got a week's worth of form to go on for these sides, both of which are quite different from what they were last year. But I think the Broncos will be too strong.
All of the Dogs... You know, up staffing has been in the outside backs. You know, let's be real. They got Pangai, but he's never been a game breaker on his own.
And Vaughn.
Well, yeah, again, really? Are you taking a fucking has-been guy who hasn't shown...
Hey, look, I agree with you. Anyone named Vaughn is always known to be a cunt. Hutt
or Motor.
Certainly an upgrade on what they had fucking forwards they borrowed from Canberra last year. Certainly an upgrade from that.
That's it. So, no way the Doggies get this one. Brisbane.
The Doggies won just by virtue of the fact that they fucking had a better goal kicker on the day.
Yeah, that's it.
And that the Cowboys made some mistakes, you know, because they thought they had that try under the sticks right, you know, in the last couple of minutes as well to snatch it from them. Like the Doggies still, everything we saw last year was on display in that first game as well. Particularly just the inability to score points when starting sets in great position. And I think the Broncos, you know, they sort of, you know, they're starting to show a little bit more backbone than we've seen. You know, progressively, like last year was better than the year before. The year before was fucking god awful, mind you. But, you know, I feel like they are on the upward incline, albeit slowly.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Dogs are going to, I just don't see where it's coming from. And look, I'm not particularly bullish on the Broncos either, but for the fact they're playing the Dogs. So.
No. Good call.
All right. Now, we don't particularly have a mailbag for this episode, do we? Did have a question sent through to me, though, from Joshua. And he sent to me, he said, I'm not sure when you're doing another podcast episode. I haven't seen a mailbag. So I've got a question for you guys for the next step. We've seen players like Lockyer transition from one playmaking position to another over the years, or players from one position playing another in New Queensland / New South Wales or international rep teams.
Yep.
It seems to me, albeit with limited knowledge outside of teams, outside of the Broncos, that it seems harder for teams to find a good specialist hooker. What playing position do you think offers the best base for a transition to the hooker position? It's a question I've been thinking about for a while. I honestly don't know enough about the game to know if I'm missing something, but it just seems to me like most teams struggle to get a good nine.
I think Cameron Smith has a lot to answer for here. In that, look, realistically, look at Api Korosau. Right? If you say great hookers, then he's not one of the ones that immediately come to mind in most cases. But all he does is give fantastic service to the halves. He understands exactly where to put it for what his halves need. And is defensively solid.
I think you're giving him too little credit. He's also excellent about looking for weakness, particularly in like fatigue and things like that in players.
Correct.
And sending the forwards at a player four times in a set.
Yes.
To the advantage at the end of the set, that kind of thing. I mean, he's smart and although he won't go down in the all time like Cameron Smith has, Smith played the vast majority of his career, in fact, probably all of it, under a rule set that doesn't exist today.
Yeah.
Which Appy is particularly adapted for.
Yeah. But the point I was going to make there is I think the shining light here is Jake Friend, who was always a good hooker, but was at the end of his career and was on a massive fucking decline until Cooper Cronk arrived at that club. And you remember the fucking, like, you would see it during games when Cronk first got to that club, that he was instructing Friend on, no, you got to get me the ball here. You got to get me the ball here. And then by the end of that season, Friend had learned how to deliver the ball to his halves. So I'm not sure that it's, you know, great nines that are missing. I think it's a combination of nines and sevens really putting in the work to get to know each other. It's about continuity of nines and sevens. Like, if you don't have a Cooper Cronk that understands how to get with somebody and work with somebody, you'd better be putting the effort in with each other.
I think the flow on from that is that sixes and sevens have diluted to such a point where there's not a great deal of, you know, you take Cleary and Cherry Evans, maybe Reynolds, and there's a couple other exceptions. There's not those true organising sevens that can have that level of control.
That's it. So in your hooker, what do you want? First and foremost, you want great service. So does that mean that a six is the best base to be a hooker?
Like, you also want them to make 40, 50 tackles a game too, so I don't know too many sixes.
Yeah, they have to be physically robust to be able to handle that increased defensive load.
That's it.
But also you need them to be able to be fast enough and with enough footwork to be a genuine threat of running out of dummy half.
Yeah. So in the modern,
so that the first receivers aren't just getting smashed all the time because there's no, you know, because they know they're never going to run it.
That's it. So if you look at the physical archetype of that, like Cameron Smith's not a second rower.
No, Cameron Smith's archetype would be a lock, right?
Yeah, and I feel like he's a real outlier as well because Cameron Smith wasn't really he never really had that running threat too much. I mean, the threat that he had out of dummy half was kicking
and
becoming a second option for a kick when they were in trouble and they needed to turn him around quickly. But he was never like a massive running hooker either. But I mean, his service was like probably next level service. So I mean, the selectivity and the runners he had to give him, you know, options and to be like, you know, deceptive and where it was going and, you know, to try and mix it up a bit for defensive lines.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit of an outlier, I think, because he was great, but with not much of a running.
But again, okay, what's Damien Cook's body type if he's not a hooker?
Lock.
Is that your answer to everything?
But again,
you ask a question, I'll give you a fucking answer.
Now, play it in reverse. If he gave exceptional service, does Tyrone Peachy's body shape lend him to being a hooker?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to go. I don't know if body shape's the defining characteristic.
No, it's not.
I don't see Peachy making 40-plus tackles a game without making 9 misses either.
No, but I'm not saying the body shape is what determines if you're a hooker or not, but I'm trying to say the question was which position gives the best base to become a 9.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think the ultimate answer to the question is I don't know that there is one. To be honest,
I think it's almost like fullback.
Yeah,
you can put a winger who's never, like, you know, how many times do we say, like, you know, DWZs of the world.
Yeah. And like, yeah, Alex Johnston as well. I mean, he goes back there plenty of times.
Yep. But it's tough to be a great fullback because of the specifics of that position.
Yeah.
You can't just put somebody else who's good at a couple of things the fullback might be good at and move him to that position.
Yeah. So. I feel like at the moment we're in like a real transition for hookers as well. I mean, imagine if you didn't have your hooker. Imagine like Appy's gone. There's no one coming up. It's like, and you've got to go to the market. There's not many recognized hookers, apart from the Storm, who are fucking hoarding two of the better ones.
Mm. Yeah.
There's not much out there. You know, Damien Cook, obviously.
Yeah.
If you think about it, there are none in Queensland.
Yeah.
Across their teams. That you would take?
Nope.
Raiders are kind of hoarding a couple of genuine hookers, but not necessarily like in Starling and Hodgson. I mean, they aren't necessarily like elite, but I mean, they are hookers though. I mean, and if you wanted a hooker, I mean, you could do worse than those two.
Yep.
But fuck, it's pretty thin outside of that.
Yeah.
Roosters don't have one.
No.
And they're a team that's, you know, star-studded, you know, one of the elite teams.
So is that because, and again, just hypothetically, because at its core, service is the number one job of a hooker, right? Is that because any kid that may show aptitude in that area is funneled into being a 6 or 7 when they're young? So it's passing skill that they show first and foremost. Mm. So they're funneled into being a 6 or a 7. So you don't have those kids, and it just ends up being the kid that can tackle that plays hooker.
Mm.
Or it's like that additional work ethic burden, just the general attrition on your body as well, of being a 9 versus, you know, in the halves, you don't necessarily have to take that much contact if you don't want to.
That's it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Oh, well.
It's a good question, man.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And on that note, that is full time for, what are we, number 446. So thanks for listening, everyone. To find our various links to our socials and Patreon and everything else, go to thisweekinleague.com/links. And thank you to everyone who has joined Patreon. We're seeing a lot of activity in there to start the season, which is excellent to see. Appreciate each and every one of you for joining up. I really need to get something together on the membership side of things. I mean, this year we're actually more prepared than any other year for 3/4 of the memberships, but we just need to get that final piece organized. I mean, literally one of the pieces I produced and it's sitting there out the back in the office. So need to get that going. We'll have that discussion over the rest of the week, I think, so we can try and push it through. Tipping, I didn't even fucking look up the results because just the shooter's apocalypse. Give, bear with me for 2 seconds, and I will see if anyone actually did, you know, what we would say, you know, did well. Competitions, Twill Shipping Championship. Okay, so there we go. I have a name I haven't seen for a while. Oh, Alpha Ben RL. You got 6. And we got a top 10, or we got top 9. All of them got 6.
Congratulations to a POM showing that by winning this week's tipping comp, you know nothing about rugby league.
Oh, Has. There we go. That's another name. Other than that, it's all basically new names, I think. That so we'll see. So with the rest of the top 10 at the moment, we'll see those guys drop out over the coming weeks, I'm sure. And I've seen 14th, there's someone called Barrett Belmore. So, yeah, nice one, mate. Tyrell Sloan next to Mortally, number 6th. Fucking calm down. But we don't have too many ESPN bunch of numbered names, so I'm glad we fucking learned that lesson last year the hard way. You boys have anything else you want to add?
I think we've covered it
all.
Beautiful. In that case, I'm going to bring it close to the proceedings. And under an hour, I'll fucking have you know. And I'll talk to you folks on Sunday.
Yeah, you will.
Later.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.